Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We are now in our fifth season, and we remain just as excited as ever to continue to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here, issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues and gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen in today as we interview experts for today's show on plastic pollution. We're going to look at the impact of plastics and plastic pollution on our health. Now, plastics are ever-present companions of our modern lives. And undoubtedly, though, they've revolutionized the way we live, offering us convenience and functionality in many, many forms and ways. However, this seemingly indispensable material harbors a dark side, inflicting profound consequences on the environment and on our human health. And so as we delve deeper into the multifaceted consequences of plastic and plastic pollution, it becomes increasingly evident that urgent attention and heightened awareness are imperative to mitigate the escalating consequences and crisis of our impending plastic pollution situation. Now, the proliferation of plastics, especially since the industrial boom in the 1950s, has resulted in an astounding production of 7 billion tons globally. Now, alarming statistics reveal that merely 9% of this volume is being recycled, with about 12% being incinerated, leaving the bulk of our plastics and plastic pollution to pervade landfills and our oceans. Now, the relentless demand for plastic products, though, coupled with the surge in global population, has spawned an ecological crisis, with plastic pollution emerging as one of the most pressing environmental threats of today. Now, a comprehensive report was produced titled Plastic, Not So Fantastic, How the Versatile Material Harms the Environment and Harms Human Health. And that report underscored the profound impact of plastic on our lives and our environment. So while plastics have undeniably made life more convenient and easier, their persistent presence in landfills for centuries and infiltration into oceans and dispersion into the air, water, and food supply have cast a long and concerning shadow over the utility of these plastics. Now, the enduring nature of plastics is staggering, actually. It's estimated that each and every piece of plastic ever produced still lingers in some form somewhere today, with 2/3 released back into the environment. And these minuscule, very, very small particles of plastic infiltrate our bodies through various avenues, from the air we breathe to the water we drink. Even the seemingly innocuous act of drinking water exposes individuals to microplastic fibers, which we're going to discuss a lot in detail lately. And this was evidenced by a study analyzing 159 drinking water samples from cities worldwide. Now, the emerging and growing field of scientific research on the health impacts of plastics is rapidly evolving. While the long-term effects are still unfolding, there is an undeniable exposure to toxic chemicals and microplastic particles throughout the entire plastic life cycle. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that an average person could be ingesting approximately 5 grams of plastic every week, raising concerns about the cumulative exposure and potential health risk of this accumulation of plastics in our bodies. The proven health effects are alarming, ranging from the potential to cause cancer to endocrine disruption, leading to reproductive and cognitive impairment. Other documented health concerns include breathing difficulties, kidney disease, and cardiovascular issues. Now, as scientific tools advance and new findings emerge, our understanding of the health risk associated with plastic exposure deepens and widens. The denigrating effects of plastic extend beyond human health, though, to impact marine life and ecosystems. And so as plastics break down into smaller and smaller particles, they infiltrate the food chain, posing, again, a significant threat to our aquatic ecosystems. And this broad category of additives, or rather the broad category of additives within plastics, considered emerging contaminants, has raised concerns about their impact on human health, particularly as it relates to disrupting our reproductive processes. The pervasive issue of microplastic pollution is not limited to oceans, though, but it extends to everyday products such as face scrubs, synthetic fibers from laundry detergent packaging, and beads from cosmetics or toothpaste containers. And these microplastics, which we're going to discuss a lot later with our experts, but they're too small to be filtered out. Not only do they pollute waterways, but they also expose humans to very, very small, minuscule plastic particles. And additionally, these, they're chemicals like the BPA that most of us have heard about that are commonly found in plastics. And these act as hormone disruptors, linking them back to the reproductive and cancer-related health problems. So plastic pollution, again, stands as a critical global environmental issue with far, far-reaching consequences for both the environment and the health. But this is a lot. But here today to help us explore and unpack some of this are two experts who are going to make us smarter. With us today, we have Anya Brandon. Anya is an associate director of U.S. Plastics Policy at the Ocean Conservancy, and she's working to advance policy solutions to eliminate plastic pollution and support the transition to a circular economy. Anya was part of a team of environmental advocates that helped pass California's SB 54 plastics pollution law, which is one of the strongest and first in the country. Welcome, Anya. Did I get all of that right?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be on the program with you today.
And thank you for making time to join us. Our other guest is Samantha Romanek. Samantha is a molecular biologist at the University of Rochester, studying innovative methods for the identification and characterization of environmental microplastics and its effect on human health. Samantha develops tools to study the effects of microplastic exposure to human health, and she also leads the microplastics research-focused microplastic work group of Western New York. Welcome, Samantha, and did I get all of that right?
Thank you. Yes, Bernice, that's all correct. And I'm excited to be here today. Thank you for having me.
And thank you again for making time to join us. Now, we only have a little bit before we need to go to our first break. But I want to start with you, Anya. From where you sit, what do you see as the most pervasive impact of plastic pollution and how it impacts our health?
Oh, that's a great question. I think we've all heard a lot about plastics in the ocean, and we're going to dive in and talk about those impacts hopefully in the next segment, as well as how that ocean actually impacts us. But I think one of the least understood impacts of plastics is that they actually impact our health throughout their entire life cycle, starting from their very creation. 99% of plastics are made from fossil fuels. So the extraction of that oil and gas is already incredibly damaging to our climate and to the surrounding communities. But turning that oil and gas into plastics takes so much additional energy. When you turn 1 ton of oil into 1 ton of plastic, you double the emissions associated with it. So these impacts are obviously felt first and worst by the frontline and fence line communities right next door, where these plastics are produced, which have well-documented increased cancer rates, asthma, among a variety of other health impacts. But we also need to know that these harms impact all of us. Plastics are fueling the climate crisis, which means more extreme weather events, higher rates of allergies and asthma around the planet, as well as higher costs for the things that we care about and use every single day.
You mentioned that turning that ton of oil into a ton of plastic uses an enormous amount of energy. Is it more innocuous or about the same to turn oil into plastics or into the fuel or gasoline we put in our cars? What's the difference in those two processes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it takes more energy, actually, to turn that oil into a plastic, which means it's a significant, significant driver of our climate crisis. I think another pervasive harm that comes from making these plastics that we don't talk about quite as much, although you did a great job covering this in our beginning here, is the amount of chemical additives that are used to make our plastics. There's over 13,000 different chemicals associated with plastics overall. BPA, as you named, is one of them that we've all heard about, but there's 13,000 out there, so many, many that we haven't heard about as well. And most of these, well, I should say many of these, have known human health impacts, from increased cancer risk to endocrine disruptions, which means messing with the balance of hormones in our own bodies just from exposure.
Indeed.
I think the best way to think about these chemical additives that helps me appreciate it is thinking about adding water to a sponge. Only in this case, the plastic is the sponge and all that water is the chemicals that we're putting into them.
I'm going to have to stop you, Anya, and I apologize. We need to go to break, but we'll continue this on the other side. It's getting darker by the moment as you're talking about all these nasty chemicals. Thank you. We'll be right back on the other side with Anya Brandon and Samantha Romanek. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, Central Market, Sunflower Shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 40 years, non-mercury, with a holistic approach looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. To today's show on plastics pollution, as we delve into how plastic and plastic pollution is impacting our health, and we are back with Dr. Anya Brandon with the Ocean Conservancy and Dr. Samantha Romanek with the University of Rochester. And so, Anya, right before the break, you were telling us about all these chemicals that are in plastics. And I gather you also mentioned, and I want to remind everybody of that, that basically, not basically, in fact, it requires more energy to turn the fossil fuel, the oil, into plastics than it does into the gasoline that we used for our car. So that's number one. But you'd mentioned, too, all these thousands of chemicals. Now, I gather that there must be some kind of chemical additive in order to make any kind of plastic.
That's absolutely correct. All of our plastics require a variety of chemical additives, really a whole cocktail of them.
Indeed. And so it's more than one in many cases. For example, my computer that I'm in front of has, you know, a lot of components. So that all of that plastic has its own additives, and my ink pen, and it has its own additives, and the plastic bag at the grocery store has its own additives. Those additives being chemicals that expose us to more potential toxins.
Exactly. So there's a whole host of chemicals that are really needed to make plastics into what we see and use every day, whether it's as simple as colorants, so just making the plastics the color we want, mm-hmm. to things like plasticizers or stabilizers or flame retardants, mm-hmm. that are used in the actual manufacturing to make those plastics easier to work with or to give them a desired quality that we're looking for. For example, not catching on fire with a flame retardant. Mm-hmm. And as I was saying, I think the best way to think about these chemicals is like adding water to a sponge. In this case, the plastic is that sponge and all the water are the different chemicals that are added to the plastic. So they're not actually stuck or bonded to the plastic in any way. So under the right circumstances, they can leach out just like water can leach out of a sponge. And that's really how we get exposed if impacted by these plastic additives.
So with each piece of plastic or each thing that is plastic, all of the chemicals that went in to make it into that plastic have the potential and indeed leach out into the environment. Some of them, I imagine, we can see and feel, and perhaps many more we cannot.
Correct. It's really hard to, you know, see something happening at the chemical level just with our naked eye. I'm sure Dr. Romanek will talk a lot about, you know, the fancy technologies that we use to actually track down some of these things. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to see what is happening, but we do know under the right circumstances that this does happen. And that's how we get exposed to all of these various chemicals.
Yeah, I think an example that comes to my mind of this, it's a small example, but it's nevertheless one you can see, and that is when plastic melts. You
exactly.
Smell the awkward and unpleasant smell, and you see it turn into something else and lose its shape. And again, very small, but that's probably one that all of us have seen. And I shudder to think the other stuff that we're not seeing and smelling. But I know the smell lets you know there's some things in there.
Absolutely.
I want to go to you now, Samantha. From where you sit, though, what are the trends in plastic pollution's effect on human health? And are there any kind of stats out there on this?
Yes, definitely. So current trends are focused on microplastics, mainly, as well as what we've been talking about before, the chemicals associated with these plastics. And so these chemicals include the bisphenols, such as the BPA, as well as phthalates and PFAS chemicals. And these are also known as forever chemicals. And that's simply because they seem to last forever in our environment. There's no chemical processes or mechanical processes or even biological processes that can break down these forever chemicals. So as long as they persist in our environment, we will forever be exposed to them, basically. And so these PFAS chemicals include those flame retardants that we have been discussing. And so really hard to study the health effects of microplastics because they are usually a mixture of particles from our environment. And we actually don't know our exact exposure yet because sometimes we lack the technology needed to quantify those really small particles, and these smaller particles are on the nanoscale. So there are some things that we are lacking in the field to be able to answer with 100% certainty of what is going on, what our exposure is, and things like that. But to evaluate toxicity, we do need to understand our exposure. And,
let me ask you this, Samantha, and you mentioned three types of plastics, bisphenols, phthalates, and PFAS. Can you, with each of those,
yes.
Can you tell us so that people know when they come in contact with or when they're using this? Because the names, you know, it's starting with bisphenols. What is around us that we use probably every day or whatever that contains those?
Okay, so with BPA, you can normally find BPA. They used to be in water bottles, but if you go to the store nowadays, you see the water bottles that say BPA-free. And then they're normally used to use BPA in linings of canned food goods. And then BPA is also found in thermal receipts. So those receipts that you get from the store, if you touch them, then you're potentially exposing yourself to BPA through those receipts.
And of course, we all touch them, but I want to make a fine point. It's in the paper receipts that we get when we go to a retail store. And again, we are all touching them. You have to touch them. You either take them out of the machine or you take them out of the retail clerk's hand. So that's a very common thing. But I have to think that there is other stuff to make that receipt with. But that's a whole nother conversation. What about the phthalates?
So the phthalates are mainly, they are found in both plastics as well as in some cosmetic products. And so, for example, a phthalate is a plasticizer. So when you add it to plastics, it makes plastics more flexible and durable. So think more of like a plastic bag or a film. BPA, when it's added to plastics, it makes plastics more rigid or hard. So think more of a reusable container.
So the phthalates, we would find them in the takeout containers.
Yes, takeout containers. But you can also think about what else is flexible that we come in contact every day.
So much.
Our clothing.
Yes.
The plastic fibers in our clothing, such as either nylon or PET, they can also include phthalates. And even PFAS, if you think about your winter wear, that's waterproof. Anything that's anti-life, basically, anti-stain, anti-water, or any kind of repellent, these are all forever chemicals that are helping produce that desired effect. And so we are exposed to these. I mean, we wear clothes almost 24/7, so we are constantly exposed to these chemicals even in our clothing.
Indeed. So phthalates are going to be in cosmetics and takeout containers and things like that. And then the PFAS are more so in anything that's got a retardant to it.
Yes. Also, you can think about carpets, your anti-stain carpets, your food packaging that is non-stick, or any kind of your cookware that's non-stick, any kind of outdoor wear that's weatherproof. And then you can also think of like coatings, adhesives, and sealants as well.
Now, again, are there any of those stats, real briefly, we just have a couple of minutes to go, Samantha, any stats, though, in terms of amounts that we're coming in contact with of these chemicals, or any stats on their effects on human health that we know of?
Yeah, so it's really hard to come up with a definitive number and again, exposure to either plastic or chemicals. But there was a new study that came out that evaluated the chemicals used in plastic materials, and they wanted to estimate the attributable disease burden and the cost in the United States. And they found that in total, an estimated amount of $249 billion was the cost of plastic-attributed disease burden in 2018. And most of it, so about $66.7 billion, was for phthalate exposure, and $22.4 billion was for PFAS exposure. So we know that these chemicals are not good for us. They create burdens on not just our healthcare and costs, but also in our environment as well, because we are not the only species that are exposed to these chemicals.
And that's just humans. Doesn't get to the animals and the food chain and all of that. That's a lot. And we just have about a minute before we need to go to break. So I'm going to start this conversation, but there's going to be a lot to complete on the other side of the break. And that is for you, Samantha, what are the primary health risks, though, and impacts that we know about that are associated with exposure to plastics and microplastics? And again, I know it's a kind of an estimate. And again, the ones that we know about and the ones that we suspect.
Yes, right. So as Anya was mentioning earlier, that there are many risks with or links to risks with these chemicals, such as cancer, infertility, and you did mention endocrine disruption as well. But another thing that these chemicals have recently been found to do is interfere with our metabolism.
And so now that's a big one. Samantha, I want to stop you right there because we have to go to break. But on the other side, we will start right there that it's recently been found that these chemicals interfere with our metabolism. We'll be right back on the other side with Anya Brandon with the Ocean Conservancy and Samantha Romanek with the University of Rochester. And they are making us smarter. Thank you all. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To our show on plastic pollution, looking at how plastics impact our human health. And we are back with Dr. Anya Brandon with the Ocean Conservancy and Dr. Samantha Romanek with the University of Rochester, and they really are making us smarter. And so back to you, Samantha, before the break, you were telling us that it recently had been found that there plastics were interfering with metabolism. Can you tell us more about that, and is there which one in particular is the culprit here?
Yeah, so they actually did a whole study where they examined a bunch of different chemicals, and what they showed is that many of the endocrine disrupting chemicals associated with plastics are also metabolic disrupting chemicals. And so what that means is many people think that your metabolism is only the breakdown of the food that we consume, but really your metabolism is all of the chemical reactions happening in the body. So not just breakdown, but build up as well. And so when you think about metabolic disruption, then these chemicals are not just disrupting the breakdown of your food that you're digesting, but also the buildup of the molecules that your body needs to function. And so we don't know exactly what that means as far as disease, but what we do know is that it can lead to obesity and subsequently diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and all these diseases. So we don't have that current link yet, but there are researchers researching this, and that's all we know at the moment, is that it can lead to obesity, which can then also lead to other diseases.
Back to endocrine disruptors, can you tell our listeners so they have a sense of what does that involve? What does endocrine disruption do to human health?
Yeah, so endocrine refers to the endocrine system, which is our hormonal system. And our hormones don't just regulate fertility, which most people associate them with, but our hormones also regulate other bodily functions, such as our body temperature, our appetite, our mood. And so when you are disrupting your hormones in your body, then you are disrupting not just your fertility or reproduction, but you could have a disruption in your mood swings, in how much you eat or don't eat, and things like that. So that's why it's important to not disrupt your hormones. And I'm just going to give an example. BPA is a synthetic estrogen. So if you're exposed to BPA, your body thinks you're producing estrogen when it's not. And so then your body might get a signal to stop producing as much estrogen. And then that's the problem. And then that's where the disruption occurs.
And I know from my own health, too, that there is a connection with estrogen and many cancers as well, especially in women. So if BPA is masquerading around in your body as estrogen, I know that certain cancers that are many cancers for women are fueled by estrogen. I want to move now, though, to Anya. Anya, I want to talk about the study y'all did, but first I want to talk about we've talked about human health, and now I want to talk about the impact of the health of our marine systems, and then to also tell our listeners why that's important to our human health. So can you talk to us about what that plastic is doing to marine health and our ecosystems?
Yes, absolutely. And it is so important to each and every one of our health. I think it's helpful to start by putting our ocean plastic pollution crisis into context. Each and every year, over 11 million metric tons of plastic are entering our ocean. That's more than a garbage truck's worth of plastic entering our ocean every single minute. So the sheer scale of this crisis is almost unimaginable. And we know plastic pollution is deadly to ocean wildlife. Animals can die from entanglement or ingestion. And those toxic chemicals we've been talking about can leach from the plastics and impact feeding behaviors, reproductive behaviors, and a whole host of other health impacts for the marine organisms, just like they can impact our health. And what we're learning, of course, is that what happens in the ocean affects all of us. We rely on the ocean for the clean air that we breathe, for food, for regulating our climate and temperatures around the planet, for travel, for economic development, and of course as a source of joy and inspiration. And plastic pollution threatens all of these, every single one of them. Once the plastic is out in the ocean or in another part of our environment, it doesn't go away. It breaks down into these smaller and smaller pieces that we've been talking about called microplastics. These are smaller than a pencil eraser, but could be all the way down to, you know, a fraction of the size of a human hair. And once they're that small, they can more easily move around than these larger plastics that we've been talking about. And of course, they wind up everywhere from the air we're breathing to the food we'll eat, which we'll discuss more about, to the water we drink. And in terms of how we get, you know, all this plastic gets into the ocean, we know that a significant amount comes from coastal and river sources, from mismanaged plastic waste. And the U.S. is the number one generator of plastic waste, both in total and per person compared to other countries. Given that, perhaps it's not surprising that we are one of the top contributors to the ocean plastic pollution crisis. So really, to tackle this issue, we need to start at home here in the United States.
Yeah, all those plastic grocery bags, where many localities are developing laws, and we had one here in Texas, and it got overturned. But I know that's, you know, we see that in our rivers and our tributaries, too. And, of course, that all gets out to the ocean in many, many instances. So, yeah, that's a lot. But could you walk our listeners through how the plastic impacts or gets ingested by marine life and how it impacts the whole food chain?
Absolutely. Just like we could ingest plastic through our mouths, obviously, animals out there can do the same thing. And it's really dangerous because so many of these, you know, plastic pollution look like other species. So the classic example here is that those thin, flexible bags that we use at grocery stores look like jellyfish if they're floating out in the ocean. Do you know who loves jellyfish? Sea turtles. So we end up with these animals mistaken these plastic pollution for their normal diet. And that's really how they get an impact. The other part that we talk about a little bit less is that these animals are just swimming in the ocean, and that's how they breathe. They have gills that move water through to get in oxygen. And through that, they actually can absorb microplastics that way. So these microplastics can actually enter them through their gills, through their oxygen exchange system there. And we're now seeing that with humans as well. So we are actually now also exposed to microplastics through the air that we breathe.
So both the sea animals as well as human beings kind of breathe in, suck in the microplastics.
Absolutely. And I bet Samantha could speak to this as well, but we do a lot of learning first in the ocean, and then we look at other systems and see the exact same thing. So we've learned a lot about what's impacting the ocean, impacting marine life, the toxicity, the endocrine disruptions. And then we go, oh, man, we as humans are also exposed to this. How is that affecting us? And so these studies in the ocean have been really groundbreaking to help us figure out how these plastics are also impacting our human health.
So I have to think that scientists can look at ocean life and perhaps see, maybe, and measure some of the plastics that they have ingested?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have really good studies at this point looking at, or quantifying, I should say, the types of plastic that are ingested by different species. If different species like sea turtles versus mm-hmm. birds are more or less exposed to different types of plastics, what their impacts are. And we have great evidence there. And then you can also see how that harms them. So whether it makes them float, which is not an issue we as humans have, but it also shows us the toxicity impacts of a lot of those chemicals, which is something that we were just talking about that we have now learned humans suffer just as well as the marine life.
So I have to think, though, that if we eat fish or fish products or some other ocean product and it contains microplastic, then we're ingesting more. It's in the food chain. Babies, adults, whomever, then get more of that on top of the plastics, the nanoplastics, microplastics that we ourselves are ingesting.
Absolutely. So this is a great opportunity to talk about a paper that my colleagues at Ocean Conservancy, led by Dr. Britta Beckler, along with an amazing team of scientists from the University of Toronto, published just last week. And we've known that, you know, fish and shellfish consume microplastics, and we've seen it in their bellies but we haven't been a ton of evidence in terms of where that plastic goes. Does it end up in their muscle, which is, you know, the part
indeed
that we as humans would eat?
That seems like it's really groundbreaking, and I want to get into it. We're going to go to break now, and we will just pop that open and delve into it right after the break. Thank you. We'll be right back on the other side with Anya Brandon with Ocean Conservancy and Samantha Romanek with the University of Rochester. Thank you all. You really are making us smarter. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care. Practicing dentistry for over 40 years, non-mercury, with a holistic approach looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To today's show on plastics pollution. And we're looking at the impact of plastics and plastic pollution on our human health. And we are back with Dr. Anya Brandon at the Ocean Conservancy and Dr. Samantha Romanek at the University of Rochester. And they are making us smarter. Now, right before the break, Anya, you were telling us about a study that the Ocean Conservancy just released earlier this week about microplastics. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this study went tried to investigate how much plastic we are consuming as humans from different protein sources. So we tested a variety of different protein sources, from red meat to alternative meat to seafood, to understand how much we as humans are exposed and if there's any patterns that we can figure out. Is it more in processed food versus non-processed food or anything like that? And what we've seen is that microplastics were found in nearly 90% of all of the protein food samples tested. And across all of the different types. So 90% of the samples had it, but every single type of protein we tested had some samples that had microplastics in it. And this suggests that we as humans are eating microplastics really no matter where we get our protein from. It's not just seafood. It's not just red meat. It's kind of across the board at this point. Which is really just a startling reminder of how prolific plastic pollution has become if it's now in every single type of protein source that we are testing. And the real top line that we found was that U.S. consumers could be consuming as much as 3.8 million microplastics a year from protein alone. So that's in addition to consumption of microplastics from the water we're drinking, the air we're breathing, and a whole host of other potential sources. So this was just investigating these protein sources. And what it's telling us is that we're consuming a whole heck of a lot more than we realize.
What made you all investigate protein sources as opposed to maybe fats
question.
Or some other?
Great question. I think, we're curious about the human diet and how much we as humans were being exposed. And we've seen a great amount of research on different animals, especially seafood animals, consuming plastics. But there was, again, that disconnect between understanding how much they're consuming as a fish versus how much is actually getting into the protein part that we actually eat, their muscles, a fillet of fish, you would say. And so when we started thinking about that, we recognized that seafood are not the only type of animal at this point exposed to plastic pollution. So we wanted to ask this question of all the different protein sources.
Like chicken and other...
Chicken, beef, exactly. But we also looked at things like tofu and alternative meat products that are made from different vegetables and plants, which we know now uptake microplastics as well, are exposed to plastics in packaging, exposed to plastics during processing. And really, there's no right or wrong answer when it comes to these protein sources. They all have potential microplastics in them. And really, the moral of the story here is that we need to reduce plastics in the first place if we're really going to tackle this issue head on.
I want to go back to you now, Samantha, and talk about some of the pathways of plastics and microplastics into our system. Are they all equal in terms of intake and, but more importantly, in terms of health impacts?
So as far as microplastics go, we are consuming them in our diet. As you know, we're breathing them through our airways, in our lungs. And then so out of those two pathways, I would think that the gut would have a bigger impact be simply because we are able to intake more, many, and many different sizes of these plastic particles, whereas in the airway, you have a lot of filters that particles have to go through. So unfortunately, in the airway, you're going to find the smaller particles.
Okay.
So I think you get down to the single micrometer size particles that can actually make it all the way down into your deep lung, which is the important area where gas exchange takes place, your oxygen for carbon dioxide and so on. And so I would think that if you have microplastics through the airway, that would be the smaller ones. Those would be more harmful for your health. However, ingestion, you can ingest many more of many different sizes. And so it's really hard to say, but each pathway has its own different effects and impacts, I would say.
But I did gather from what you just explained to us that they're all bad. And I'm tempted to ask, is there any good news about plastics or plastic pollution? And that would kind of take us back to perhaps maybe some of the most important or significant scientific breakthroughs and findings. I have to think that that's where the good news is, because they give us information with which to protect ourselves or with which to adapt or mitigate. So talk to us about those, the most significant scientific findings or breakthroughs.
Sure. And I honestly don't think that it is a scientific breakthrough that is important right now. What I think is important is that we are simply acknowledging this problem in the first place, and we are seeing things happening. So we are seeing this global plastics treaty to help reduce the our dependency, at least on single-use plastics and plastics in general. And so I think just the pathway we're taking towards mitigating this problem would be the biggest breakthrough, especially seeing like the EPA starting to regulate chemicals such as PFAS to help reduce our exposure and mitigate this problem in the environment. And then you're also seeing products being made with less plastic, less chemicals. You see the BPA-free, things like that. So I think all of these actions are more powerful than any scientific discovery. And I think that's what we need more of moving forward, is simply trying to reduce our plastic that we create in the first place, reducing our dependency on plastics, and simply finding better alternatives, or just simply not using plastic at all when it's not even necessary. So I think these are bigger actions we can take.
Indeed, indeed. But I scientists do deserve some props, because it's only through your work has attention focused on plastics and what they're doing to us. Otherwise, we'd all be moving merrily along, thinking plastics were our friend, thinking they were good. You know, that's also kind of the purpose of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, is to show ordinary people in their everyday lives what how various environmental issues are impacting their health and their day-to-day lives. And again, most of the time, about 99.9% of the time, that starts with scientists doing your thing and then letting us know. Then it becomes, and then it has to grow, and the communications part pushes in to push us to take action. But I wanted to go back to something you said, to the Global Plastics Treaty. And we just have a few minutes to go before we're over. But very briefly, what can ordinary people in their everyday lives perhaps expect from the Global Plastics Treaty?
I mean, I think that They are setting regulations on plastics, perhaps some bans. I know this is happening on a state level, too. You see plastic bag bans. You see the bottle bill that are helping, trying to reduce litter, things like that. But so I think just setting goals, future goals to reduce plastics in general. And this is global. So different countries are involved with this. I haven't read up on the updates on what the United States is doing, but maybe Anya has more to talk about on that.
Yeah, Anya, last word. What do you think are some of the most innovative and impactful initiatives or projects to help us combat plastic pollution and its effects on the ocean, but also on human health?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with Samantha more that the most innovative and impactful solutions that we're looking at right now are in the policy space. You know, there's a lot of exciting research on new materials or ways to break down plastic waste. I did a lot of that myself. And really, to tackle this issue head on, we know that we need to create a system change. And you do that through policy. That's exactly what we're doing at the Global Plastics Treaty. All these countries around the world are coming together to negotiate what we can do collectively to tackle our collective issue. That's what we're doing at the state level, from passing bans to holding producers actually accountable for their waste. And that's what we're doing at the federal level, too. So policy is something that is a little bit harder to wrap our minds around sometimes, but it's something that we all can get involved in by taking action with nonprofits or talking to your local representatives and just telling them you care about this issue.
Indeed, that we shouldn't have so many plastic bottles with plastic containers, and voting for and supporting those localities where they want to have bans on plastic bags, right?
Exactly.
And I would think, too, from the standpoint of scientists, there's a policy, too, but also your research in terms of helping folks find better plastic alternatives. But thank you so much. You all have really made us smarter today. We've been with Dr. Anya Brandon with the Ocean Conservancy and Dr. Samantha Romanek with the University of Rochester. And they really have made us smarter, have helped us to understand and explore more about this plastic soup that we live in, and most importantly, why we have to care about it. So thank you all for joining us today. And thank you, listeners, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. The conversation starts here, but our goal is for it to continue in your home, in your social circles, in your workplaces, at the water cooler, and in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves. And each of those tiny acts can seem insignificant, but all of them add up one way or the other to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you, and join us again next week for more on plastic pollution. And listen to any of our past shows on podcast wherever you get yours. Thank you. Mm-hmm.